Welcome to the Infrastructure Network, where we bridge the civil infrastructure education gap. Our on-demand video education courses, captivating podcast episodes, interactive virtual events, and tailored shows are all designed to spotlight innovative solutions and professionals dedicated to fixing America's deteriorating infrastructure. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Infrastructure Network. My name is Chad Smeltzer. I am your host. Today, we are going to be talking about non-revenue water loss with Andrew Sworsky, who's with infrasync.com. And Emma Quayle, who is an independent water loss consultant. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
I appreciate you guys coming on. This all kind of started with a LinkedIn post. We were talking about $1 trillion leaks or something like that. I don't remember the exact part of the post, but I saw you guys commenting on it. And I was like, wait, this is good stuff. We need to talk about it and get it out there so other people can hear your thoughts and, you know, about water loss and how it impacts cities. So to kind of get us started, Emma, we'll go first. Give us a little background of your experience and what you're doing.
Okay, so at the moment, I'm an independent water loss control consultant. I have just shy of about 23 years in the non-revenue water space. So it's something that I'm really passionate about. I'm really glad today to be part of this conversation. And this really wasn't a choice vocation for me. I studied a master's in environmental science back in Northern Ireland, and I didn't suddenly wake up one day and decide I want to walk the streets and do leak detection and analyze data. But that's really how it got started for me. And I'd probably say that's why I'm such a big advocate for hands-on practical experience today, especially for salespeople and senior management. So what I would say is get out there, get your hands dirty, put yourself out of your comfort zone and touch and feel and use the technology at, you know, on-site demos, training, internal, you know, sessions, and understand the limitations of your technology. So I'm definitely a big, big supporter of that. You know, I think a lot of salespeople today miss out on upselling opportunities and, you know, partnering with other complementary technologies. So it's really important in my mind to have that technical background. And I would say, even though I didn't want to go out and stand in cold Irish weather putting, you know, sensors in the field, it's really stood by me because I've moved into more of a sales business development capacity since I came to the US about 15 years ago. And, you know, when I came here, I went and did my water distribution operator license, believe it or not. But again, it was just to get that real technical background and understanding of how water distribution systems worked over here as opposed to back in Ireland. You know, we don't have elevated storage tanks, you know, our hydrants are all underground. There's things like that that really stood out to me as being different. So I wanted to understand what was going on. So as I said, that background has really, really helped me in my sales career. I've worked for some of the big players in the industry over here, but recently I've worked with three startups, two of which have come from the UK and the other from outside the water arena. So I know only too well what the challenges are in this market in terms of how water utilities accept new technologies, because there is kind of slow adoption of some strategies and things that we'll talk about later. But it's a subject that I'm really passionate about. I love talking about it. And I'd like to say thanks again to Chad. Really looking forward to the conversation.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us. And the audience is going to love your commentary. I'm looking forward to it. Andrew?
If they understand me.
Yeah, they definitely will.
They sound great. My background's a little bit different, still in the water industry. So got started actually in a humanitarian trip in El Salvador when I was about 13 years old, did some shallow water wells that kind of sparked my love of water infrastructure. Thought, well, the whole world needs this, including the US. So went through traditional engineering school at Texas A&M, worked for a smaller engineering firm based out of Houston called Jones and Carter for quite a few years. Great company, great people. Eventually worked with a company called Stantec, larger engineering firm, doing projects all over the water cycle. So large capital projects, master planning studies, digital twins before that was really a thing, but implementing all these different pieces of technology and infrastructure across the water cycle. So wastewater collection, water distribution, treatment, environmental, everything else. And then decided to get more focused on the technology side. So went over to Xylem for about two and a half years. Great team there with lots of great hardware and software and tools all around the water cycle. But did quite a few projects focused on water loss. And so just had all these different tools, the sensors, you know, whether it's flow meters, acoustic leak sensors, everything else, all the tools needed to solve water loss. I had a good time doing that. Then after a couple of years, realized I think the technology is a little bit further ahead than the utility's ability to adopt and implement the technology. And so decided to go out, start my own firm. Chad mentioned it earlier, InfraSync or InfraSync.com. And that is all focused on helping utilities accelerate using these new technologies and tools. So many great options out there, especially today when we get into non-revenue water. But just taking all those from different sources and implementing those into each utility, because I think everyone watching this knows every single utility is unique and different. No two pipe networks are the same. They weren't designed the same. They aren't operated the same. They're all unique. So it's a huge challenge for these utilities to take off-the-shelf tools and apply those to their own infrastructure. So that's what we're doing now and having a great time doing it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Andrew, for the introduction, Emma, at you as well. And this is going to be fun. So I want to kind of go back to where this post came up, the $1 trillion leak. Do you guys remember any parts of that? I was just curious.
You know what? I comment on so many post chats.
Got it.
I think that was really about, that was about sort of our population growth, or sorry, populations sort of getting smaller, and water utilities having to cope with that sort of dwindling population and having to cover those costs. So I think that's a big issue. And I think in terms of non-revenue water and water loss, you know, that's one of the big sort of drivers, I think, that we should, you know, keep in mind to save water and really, really push, you know, non-revenue water technologies and strategies.
Yeah, I think part of it was around, there's such a huge funding gap for infrastructure in this country, in the US. And so depending on what you're looking at in the water distribution system, it's anywhere between, you know, 30 to even up to $100 billion a year in spending that we're falling short of. And so you think about that, hey, if we keep at this rate, after 10 years, we'll have racked up another $1 trillion in more infrastructure debt, essentially. So every year that goes by, our infrastructure gets older and older. We aren't replacing it fast enough. And so that's what's making more utilities turn towards more technology and options to control their water loss. Because, I mean, raise your hand if you're a utility out there that can afford to replace every pipe in your network whenever you want to. You can't. It's too expensive.
And especially when you guys just kind of pointed out when ratepayers are leaving a community, right? And you have hundreds of miles of water distribution pipes out there. There's no one to pay for it, right? You guys had a great point with all that. And that's why I wanted to talk about this today and get different perspectives from both of you on non-revenue water loss and your experiences. And so I'm going to start with this in a couple questions. The first question is going to be, what compels utilities, let me show this on my bottom screen here, what compels utilities to prioritize water loss reduction considering the balance between capital and operational costs? Who wants to tackle this one first?
Well, I mean, from my experience coming from an environment that is very heavily regulated in terms of water loss and leak detection, coming to the US, that's not the case. And I think that, you know, utilities need to keep in mind that they're losing a product, you know, just like Coca-Cola or a brewery or whatever. This is actually a product that they're spending money to treat, pump, you know, you name it, to get it to our homes and to get it into businesses. So they need to, when they think about a water loss control or non-revenue water program, they need to think about the actual economic ramifications that's having on their business, because a water utility is essentially a business, right? And I think that was one of the points I made on my post. So the first sort of driver for a water loss reduction program in my mind, and I think more so in the US, is that revenue loss. It's got to be economically efficient. Their business has to run, you know, efficiently if it's going to sustain itself. So that's one of the big drivers, I think, for water loss reduction. And obviously, yes, the volume of water that they're losing. I mean, I've seen 600 gallon per minute leaks run into a storm sewer that you know, if it hadn't been found, in 6 months' time, it would have been a $1.2 million cost to that water utility. So when you put it in that context, you know, it's much more compelling to do it. And I think it has been, over the last 15 years and being in the US, it's been a hard sell.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely a harder sell over here than what it is in other places in the world. So, you know, there is very, very logical reasons to do it, you know. And there's other things like operational optimization and, you know, the costs of operating the system. It's all sort of, everything's more efficient, I guess, if you do a leak detection program or a water loss control program. It doesn't have to be, and I keep talking about leak detection. We have to remember as well that non-revenue water is not just leak detection. So, yeah, Andrew, I don't know if you want to elaborate on that.
Yeah, I'll mention one additional big item, and I'm starting to see this even in large economies like Texas and Florida that are very healthy economically for most of the utilities. When you're losing 20 to 30% of your produced water into the distribution system, that requires you to build treatment facilities, pumping facilities, 20 to 30% larger. So I've been on projects over $1 billion for new treatment plants. And if you can imagine, hey, can we take that same $1 billion treatment plant and reduce the size by 20 to 30%? You've just saved taxpayers $200 million. By instead investing that money into your water distribution network. Now, a lot of utilities aren't that size, but bring those numbers down. If you're a utility, look at, hey, we need another 10 million gallons a day of capacity. Well, that could be expensive depending on what type of facility. That's a $50 to $100 million project. Hmm. That's expensive. You've got to pay that off over 15 or 20 years. And so if you're a utility and your water loss rates, non-revenue water is over 30%, you've got a duty to try to bring that down under control. So you don't have to overbuild and build larger tanks, larger pump stations, just to pump that water out to the system for it to dissolve into the ground or get unregistered by the meters. So it's not just good operational practices. A lot of it can be capital savings. If you spend the right money in the distribution system, that actually helps you out on the production and treatment side a lot as well.
Yeah, and I think it's good also to point out that, you know, physical losses from your system are probably the cheapest source of water a utility has. They've already treated it. They've already pumped it. The cost of recovery is actually, there's a good payback on it. If you look at some of the numbers and you look at the cost of your water and what you're losing, the payback of doing a non-revenue water program, it actually, there's a quick return on it. And I don't think we shout about that enough, you know? So it's something we'll have to keep in mind. And I think that will come to the forefront and encourage more utilities to move forward with it.
Do you think that being that the distribution system, you know, there's a cost to fixing all the pipes and replacing all the pipes, right? Versus just like you said, Andrew, upgrading a facility, like the pump stations by 20, 30%, you know, the treatment facility, 20, 30%, just building bigger, right? If we would have just fixed the sewer pipe or water distribution system in the first place, would it make sense that we should focus our money there first, get that set up for another 50 to 100 years, and then look at our treatment side of the, you know, building and increasing volume and capacity there versus, you know, what's holding us back from just fixing the pipes in the communities? I don't understand. You still have billions of dollars sitting there.
Emma, I'll defer to you on the complexities of finding the non-revenue water.
I'll find it. So
Andrew passed that off.
Yeah, so I have worked with multiple technologies. I've sold it, I've used it. So I'm very familiar with the limitations, what it does, what it doesn't do. So in terms of finding the actual physical losses, we've got acoustics, we've got inline leak detection, we've got satellite, we've got dogs. We've got, you know, all different sorts of solutions out there, risk analysis models, but there are limitations to all. And I think each one of them has a different place. I think that, as you said, Andrew, every utility is very different. There is an opportunity to combine those technologies together to get the best outcome. So there's no such thing, if you're working for a company, there's no such thing as a competitor. Really what we should be doing is collaborating and bringing our solutions together. There's really no silver bullet to leak detection. So For example, if you've got a very busy downtown area, you know, using a correlator or a listening device is not always the best thing to do because it's a microphone, right? It's going to pick up all the background noise behind. So maybe you want to introduce an online, or sorry, an inline solution for that, that actually listens to the water column. If you've got, you know, a vast area and you want to do something quickly, you know, and get a guide to where you should prioritize your water loss, then maybe satellite's the way to go. You know, there's different technologies we need to introduce. But the point that I will reiterate and reiterate over and over is that all these technologies that we have now and all these newcomers that are coming into the industry with new solutions, they're all guiding us. They're not actually putting the X on the ground. So, you know, and we're not there yet. You know, it doesn't matter how good your technology is. We don't understand what's in the network to start with. We don't have 100% confidence that, you know, this line's PVC or this is metallic. We, you know, so your technology may be the best in the world, but we still need human intervention. We still need boots on the ground. And that may be a very old fashioned approach, but that's the reality today. We don't have, you know, if we could sit remotely and tell a utility to go here, mark the X up and dig, that would be great, but there's a lot of risk with it. So there's a lot of different solutions out there and a lot of limitations, but I think we need to work together and collaboratively and offer the best outcome to a water utility. And in essence, as a consultant, that's really what I'm trying to do, is go into a water utility and say, you know, you've got an open book of, you know, technologies and solutions out there. Let's sit down and understand your network and figure out what it is you really need. I think I've come from a sales place as well, so I understand. But a lot of vendors are really, really pushing their technology, despite whether it's the best solution for the utility. So I think that we need to be more sort of conscious and cognizant that utilities are strapped for money and budget and people these days. So they're kind of in a vulnerable position. And so I think we need to help them rather than just sell them, you know, the best sales pitch.
Yeah.
But yeah, we really need to work together and provide a sort of collaborative solution.
I love that. Andrew?
Yeah, I'll add that it's often easier to get the capital funding for a large treatment project or one large diameter waterline project. To say, hey, we need $100 million for this one project and that'll solve our issues. It's a little bit simpler to explain to the ratepayers, the elected officials, or others. When you look at non-revenue water, it, as Emma was mentioning, it's a constant work. The most successful programs I see is where they say, hey, we don't know exactly what we're going to do when we start, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to put $1 million in the budget every single year for the next 5 or 10 years. And we're going to build upon our success year after year. And you get some quick wins in year one or two, but it's really that going back every single year, that consistency of applying whatever tools or processes you need that year to build upon and move forward. And you have to work across different departments in the utility. So it can often be technically more challenging to do a long-term non-revenue water program than it can be to do a one-off large capital project.
It's just easier. Yeah.
Not to mention you also have to pay for it with operating budgets instead of capital budgets, which are very difficult for utilities.
Yeah.
And to add to that, a lot of water utilities implement annual leak detection surveys. That's great. But, you know, the service provider is going to leave site. And guess what? There's a leak that's blown up a street down the road. So it changes from day to day. An annual leak detection survey, in my mind, is good, but it needs to be more of a long-term strategy towards non-revenue water. You really need to be thinking outside the box. And it's not, again, it's not just leak detection. The first thing in my mind with a non-revenue water program would be to do a water audit. There's free software on the AWWA website that you can download. And the water audit software will basically, you know, it will go through the different sort of steps of non-revenue water or buckets, if you like, strategically. So you can go in there and punch in a couple of numbers and very quickly you'll recognize where the shortfalls in your data are. So it could be on the metering side. It could be you know, on the leakage side. But I think there needs to be that kind of methodical approach to non-revenue water before you jump into making a big investment. And the meter side, obviously, they're a utility's cash register. If they're not accurate, you know, the output of the audit's not going to be accurate either. So I think we need to start from the very beginning, test the meters, make sure they're accurate, measure everything you can measure. And then, you know, the validity of your data will get better, and you'll have an informed kind of set of data to do your capital planning and, you know, prioritize where your efforts need to be.
That's good stuff. Yeah, very good. Andrew, you want to add any more or are you good?
No, let's keep our moving, Chad.
I love it. Okay, so you guys brought up a bunch of great points. The first one being, you know, I'm talking to the city of Toledo right now, which you guys saw the Todd Soms is looking for a solution, right, to find leaks. They have 400 a year, and they obviously don't want to have to keep, you know, waiting for the next one to happen, right, to put a cave in the streets or, you know, just cause some kind of damage that impacts the community, right? So they're trying to be proactive and find these leaks ahead of time. But they can't, like you kind of mentioned, Emma, you said that some technologies come into these cities, they present like they got the best solution and it's going to solve all the problems. It's going to find these leaks. And, you know, what we're really starting to see is it's not the case. It's like selling vaporware, right? And it's not solving the city's problems. They're overselling stuff just to get a quick sale, like kind of what we're alluding to there. And I think it's interesting, Andrew, what you're doing with your InfraSync is you're basically coming in as a, you know, provider of managing the data and stuff and helping the cities, you know, manage it better, because there is, like Emma said, a shortage of people. There's shortage of resources, there's shortage of knowledge and understanding what technologies are out there that are going to come in to help find leaks, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. And as I was sitting here listening to you guys, I was thinking, well, what if, let's say, hypothetically, the system was perfect. There's no leaks. There's nothing going on, right?
I've heard that.
So what would it look like if everything was good? Like the system was no leaks, no non-revenue water loss. The meters were on point. We didn't have failing meters that were off, you know, misreading data and stuff like that. What would a perfect world kind of look like? I was curious in your thoughts.
Do you want me to?
So I talked to a handful of utilities. They're often wholesale providers. Mm. So that's a bit of a different category, but they claim non-revenue water below 5%, which is almost perfect. But if you're in the scenario, no water loss whatsoever, man, does that allow you as a utility to focus on optimizing so much else in your system? Then you can really work with the chemical dosing at all these production facilities. You can work with optimizing you're pumping during time of day. You have such confidence in your capital project projections. And so you can clearly tell, hey, all the utility ratepayers, this is almost exactly what your utility is going to be for 5, 10, 15 years out. Just the amount of stability that would give a utility if they had the perfect system and no leaks. Man, imagine the things they could go focus on and the consistency they could provide their communities.
Yeah. No doubt. Go ahead. Yeah.
I've heard that a lot, that, you know, we don't have any leakage. Well, that in itself, I mean, that is not true. If you have a distribution network that has fixtures, you know, appurtenances, joints, there is background leakage. That there comes to what you call an economic level of leakage where it's just not viable to do leak detection anymore. There, you know, we're not going to get it down any further. So to say you have no non-revenue water, you have no leakage, that's just not feasible, you know?
Yeah.
But even though you don't think you have it, I mean, 50% of leaks don't surface, right? Mm-hmm. Around 50%. So you're going to see the reported leaks and you're going to say, well, we don't have many of those, but what about what you can't see? You know, and that's the thing. It's kind of like death by a thousand cuts. You're going to probably, the big ones are going to come up at some point, or they're going to show themselves somewhere. But it's those smaller leaks, those drips and drabs that you really need to go after, because those are the leaks that have the longer runtime. And if a lake has a longer runtime, you know, higher volume of water, more expensive to the water utility. So it's important to really focus on those in my mind. So in order to do that, you need to have that long-term strategy in place. You need to have, you know, whether it is you do leak detection internally on a day-to-day basis, but realistically, that's not going to happen over here. We don't have the manpower, the expertise to do it. So purchasing or investing in a technology or a strategy like DMAs or district metered areas, for example, is a great way of, you know, having that long-term monitoring or data available. So if something does pop up, you can reduce that runtime and be on top of it right away. And that's really how you tackle leak detection, you know, is to be on top of it all the time. It's doing that annual survey, as I said, is great, but it's not going to solve your problem.
Yeah. Andrew, anything?
What separates a great utility at doing this from a mediocre utility is that consistency from the utility. And are they treating this? Do they have one or two responsible people in charge of their leak detection and non-revenue water across the entire utility? And are they given the support inside the utility to keep moving that forward? If you have that set up, almost no matter the tools or technologies you use, you'll eventually get it figured out and you'll be successful. Whereas if you don't have that institutionally set up, you're going to start something, you're going to create new technology or tool that you think is going to solve all your problems. And then 6 months later, you're right back where you started. And it may not even be the technology's fault. It may be just because you bought it and they gave you great results. Say they identified all your highest risk pipelines in the network. Well, but then what's the next step? You've actually got to go out and check those for leaks or replace them. So it's all about connecting each piece of technology with the next.
Yeah. Good points. It's funny when you guys said that, because when I was selling sewer root control services, I would get the same thing from cities that were called Tree City USA. And I'd walk in there, they're like, oh, we don't have tree roots. I'm like, well, when's the last time you looked at your sewers? I was a little worried, right? It's kind of crazy when you start getting objections like that. And it's like, how do you not have roots?
Chad, I've got a funny story for you. I'll make it quick.
Go for it.
Young engineer, fresh out of college, doing some CCTV video reviews. And I kept finding roots. Yeah. And this was in a nice residential neighborhood. It's like, okay, well, I want to make sure that when we're doing the repair plan, we don't take out anybody's nice trees. And so we want to look at the alternative methods. And I didn't know any better. I didn't have that much experience in root control. And it's like, huh, well, how come every single time I see roots in the sewer line, there's this great 50-year-old oak tree within 15 or 20 feet of that worn spot that if we just do open cut, we're going to kill. And so at the end of it, I had to do everything through the pipes, through non-invasive methods. Yeah. But that's just a funny story of once you start to see the connecting pieces, oh yeah, of course, whenever there's large roots in the sewer line, there's a beautiful oak tree, above it that somebody loves very much in their front yard and they don't want you to kill.
Yeah, always. I don't want to get off subject on that one, but I can talk about roots for days. All right, next question. How do utilities decide between developing in-house solutions versus outsourcing to specialized service providers for non-revenue reduction? This is what you guys were kind of talking about. So I'm curious your thoughts on this.
So I have, in my experience, to actually sell a product to a water utility is difficult because, again, the manpower, the expertise is not there. And a lot of times what's happened is these utilities get technology into their hands. They're out using it themselves. And if something goes wrong with it, guess what? It's the technology's fault. It
doesn't work.
It's not us. It doesn't work. So, you know, that can be very risky for a vendor to do that, I think. But if you're looking at a long-term solution, again, if you do have the capabilities to do it in-house, then I think it's better. But the way the industry's moving now, it's moving much more towards a service delivery model. Water utilities are stretched in so many directions. And I would say that's got worse after COVID. I've definitely seen a shift into more digital automated solutions. You know, utilities are trying to get smarter about what they're doing and they're bringing in third parties to do it. So, you know, I do see a shift there. I think that technology is great, but there has to be some sort of support from a third party, you know, company to help with that non-revenue water reduction.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, I mean, selling product and selling service and solutions a different ballgame, but definitely I think the service delivery piece is picking up more. Utilities are using third parties more and more, I think, every day.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think if a utility's trying to figure this out, just ask yourself the question, will you have more or less staff that you can dedicate to non-revenue water reduction in the next 5 years? For a few utilities, they will have more staff. But for the vast majority of utilities I'm talking to, they expect to have less staff on water distribution and water reduction. They want the staff. That's great. But it's just very difficult to find high quality operators, especially in the distribution and treatment systems nowadays. And so I think a utility needs to look at it as a form of almost risk control of how much do you want to keep this in-house, but no, you may not have the manpower for that moving forward in the future, versus how much of this do you want to put out of house with external service providers and set up some long-term contracts. I think that's a difficult decision for every utility, how much they do it. But I think the trend we're seeing from almost across the whole country is more and more service providers for using multiple technologies.
Yeah, that's same trending on the wastewater side, very similar. Mm-hmm. You sell or give a product or technology to find sewer defects or something like that, right? To the in-house staff. And it was always an issue of like, it didn't work. Something was wrong with the tech and they just needed more support. Is what I'm learning is a lot of the sales process and the technologies and companies that come into these cities, they just walk away as soon as they provide the tech or the solution, right? That they are supposed to find non-revenue water loss, right? And that's where cities just get upset. They distrust the salespeople. They distrust the companies that they work with. It makes it very difficult to, as another salesperson walking behind that to come in and do the same thing, right? Think about it. You have a solution that really does work, but this first one didn't do as well. And you're walking in there and now they're looking at you like you're just going to be another salesperson that walks away and doesn't support us. I mean, that's really the perception of what is out there right now. And it's very difficult. So we definitely need to bridge that gap.
Yeah. I'll quickly say if you're a utility and it sounds too good to be true, especially in the distribution or collection system, it probably is too good to be true. Yeah. And I don't mean that to say that the technology or whatever doesn't work at all. What I mean, it probably does work, but there's probably a lot more time and commitment required to take those results and do something productive with it to close the loop. Yeah. As the utility.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're still very much in proof of concept mode. Having come from three startups, water utilities are reluctant to go ahead with a big investment in a new technology, especially one coming outside the US, because going back to that support mechanism, they want local support in the US for their technology. And it's just a fact. It's just how it is. So, it's a difficult sell. For sure.
It is. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's one of those things we'll hopefully get there, as technology progresses, as acceptance becomes, acceptance of technology becomes more prevalent, I guess. I don't know. It's probably the wrong word, but you know what I'm getting at. It's like, we'll get there. Some point in time, we'll definitely get there. All right. Last question for this episode. What steps should utilities take to begin their journey towards effective non-revenue water management? Who wants to tackle that one?
Well, I think I kind of covered this earlier a little bit about starting with a water audit. Yeah. I think there needs to be a very methodical approach to it. There's no point in jumping into a leak detection program or a meter replacement program unless that's really where you're losing your money. So, if you go into the water audit, you've got all sorts of inputs that you can put in there. You could start with, even though your data is inaccurate and you don't have the answer to everything, you can still go in there, put your data in and really understand where your sort of downfalls or your shortfalls are, what you need to work on and what you don't, and how you can kind of improve on the accuracy. But the big thing for me is measure, make sure your meters are calibrated, make sure they're correct, they're your cash registered. So may that be your input meter, your export, your import meters, your production meter, whatever, your DMM meters, all of those need to be accurate to give you a true picture of what's going on in your system and truly where you need to focus your efforts. So, you know, a lot of utilities as well have manual red meter systems, which, you know, there's a lot of error there as well. So we haven't got the budget, obviously. The utilities don't have a budget to replace their systems or upgrade them all to AMI, but there's places where there could be some improvements to improve the data of the water audit. Leak detection is a particularly hard one, I think, to quantify here in the US because there's a very slow adoption of district metered areas. You know, district metered areas are a great way of, you know, managing your network and being able to actually monitor the flow and the volume of your water in certain areas. So with a district metered area, you'll meter the water going into that particular area and you'll monitor the nightline flow. So if the nightline flow is going up all of a sudden, then you know that that particular area has got a problem and we need to focus our leak detection efforts in there. It's just a great way of sort of breaking everything down and, you know, being smarter really about how you manage your network.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say all day long, a water audit's the first step.
Good points.
Yeah. You're going to be in a better spot after a water audit than before every time.
For sure.
I'll mention one other thing, and I highly encourage utilities, regardless of the issue they're trying to tackle, but especially for non-revenue water, make a list. And there's three different lists. And I've got a template, no cost, happy to share with anybody. What's all the hardware you already have in place? Now, it could be meters, could be pressure sensors, acoustic monitors, your own in-house correlators. Write a list of that. Hey, we've got these five things or these 20 things we already own or have existing contracts for, other stuff. That's what we have. Then write out a similar list for the software. Hey, do we have software for our advanced metering infrastructure to track all that? Do we have any software for pipeline repairs and tracking that? Where's all the data? So write down a list of all the software and databases your utility uses. And then finally, write down a list of all the services your utility has. So that could be internal. You could have a leak detection team. You could have a pipeline repair team. You could have external contractors or engineering firms or others. And I'd encourage you, if you sit down and you go through all of those, you'll end up with 5 to 10 items in each list. And they're often spread across different departments. And then it kind of jumps out at you. It's like, oh, we've already got probably half the tools, if not more, we need to start solving these problems. We just need to start connecting them together doing that process. So if you go through a water audit and you've got that list of those three different categories, and that's the hardware, the software, data, and then those services, if you're able to sit down and work across the utility and really map all that out, you're going to be in a great place to make some good decisions about what you've already invested in and can move forward. As Emma was mentioning about the district metering areas, I talked to a lot of utilities and their distribution team doesn't quite understand everything in their metering contract. They may already have the ability for district metering areas in a contract, or it's a low cost additional adder or something. And so they don't have to go through a 3 to 5 year design and procurement cycle. They've got something almost off the shelf they could pick up and use just if others in the utility knew about it. So I highly encourage everyone, water audit, and then those three steps.
These are great points both of you just made. And it's very helpful because we need, you know, people like yourselves that are out there and really just giving that type of advice. It's straightforward. This is where you need to start. And I'm not trying to pitch you that, you know, we have the best solutions, going to find your, you know, leaks all over your water, and we're going to solve all those problems. You know, overselling, I think, is key. So you guys have a great point of all those things you just brought up. What is your vision? And we're going to end this. This is the last question. What is your vision of the future of water? Emma, who wants
to? I can go first.
Okay.
My vision dead by the time it gets to where it needs to be.
Go ahead, Andrew.
If we can have every gallon of water tracked across the urban water cycle, so you know from the lake or the reservoir or the aquifer through treatment, through distribution, through the collection system, and then back out into the environment. If we can have the technology and processes in place at every utility to track all of that, I think that will enable so many utilities just to be better stewards of their water for more efficient operations. So I think that's where we're trending. I think that's the future of water, is the right sensors and software to track every gallon, every piece of asset across the system, and have all that data connected and working together. I think we've got a long ways to go and a lot of hard work to get there, but I think that's definitely possible.
Yeah. I think there's definitely still a lot of education to be done, still a lot of awareness. I mean, we've got about 50% of the states in the US are doing no form of water loss control reporting. You know, we've 50%? Got at least, yeah. Holy so goodness. There's some states that are very forward thinking, California, Georgia, they're all regulated to do some form of water loss control reporting, and others have got sort of rudimentary processes in place, but there are some states that are doing nothing. So that attitude and that awareness and education needs to change. And there is technical assistance programs out there. There is grants, there is funding to push these things along. So I would really encourage those utilities to look into those. If they're finding it difficult to justify, there is the tools out there to do it. But as far as where we're moving, we're definitely moving towards a more automated, more digital era. Yeah. I think at the moment, the water utilities today are guinea pigs for the next wave of definitely leak detection. You know, with all these new technologies coming in, I do believe that someday we will be able to remotely pinpoint a leak, hopefully. Fingers crossed, but that's where I would see it going. I would see the whole leak detection process being automated. It's still slightly clunky today. We're getting better at it, but you know, we're moving in the right direction. But first things first, we need to get the word out there and educate people.
I love it. Thank you, guys.
I'd be curious, Chad, your response as a host, let you get the final word in about where you see the future.
I appreciate that. So yes, I think Andrew and Emma, you both are aligned in the same realm. It's like, we have to, first of all, we have to have the data. Like, we got to know where our assets are in the system first. I think that's where you do the audit you kind of mentioned. That's huge, right? We got to find where our assets are. If we don't know where they're at, then how are you going to put together a, you know, 360 solution to the whole water management system that we're talking about? And that's where, Andrew, you were talking about from where the water is getting pumped in, what reservoir, where it's coming from, the pumps that are pushing it through the systems, all that stuff's got to be monitored. We have to have sensors in place. We have to have a lot of devices, IoT devices in place, so that we can really track data of where leaks are potentially going to occur, degradation of the materials in the pipes, things like that. These all play factors in the soil conditions of where those pipes are located. All this data is really going to help us understand the future of the life cycle of our assets of water distribution. So we really just need to first understand where everything's at, and then start to look at what technologies are available, like you guys are mentioning, to implement into the system so we can start tracking it for sure. And I can talk about that a lot more, but we are out of time, guys. So thank you both for being here. Andrew, how can people get a hold of you?
You can connect with me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way. So just look up Andrew Swirsky, really the only one there. Or you can go to infrasync.com and learn more about what we're doing as a company.
Love it. Emma?
Yeah, same with me, LinkedIn. So Emma Quayle. Or email me at emma.quayle@synergyh2o.com.
Love it. Well, thank you both for joining us on the show, and appreciate your time and appreciate what you're doing for the industry, because that's what we got to do. Education. You know, this is important. You guys are bringing awareness to what's actually happening out in the industry. And this is huge for us to move forward in civil infrastructure. So appreciate what you guys are doing.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. Great.
Thank you, Chad.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.
Become part of our network today. Thank you for tuning into the Infrastructure Network. We're dedicated to rebuilding and educating on America's infrastructure, but we can't do it without your help. Share this content, join our conversations, and let's innovate together for a resilient future. Don't forget to subscribe for more insights. Together, we can bridge the gaps and strengthen our nation. See you on the next episode.